And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this breakdown edition of a Middle Tennessee State Blue Raider drumming that occurred Saturday afternoon. A 34-3 Golden Gopher victory, and frankly, I didn't think it was that close, but it helps to have a defense playing as well as they are. So joining Luke and I for the first time in 2017 is my second cousin, Golden Gopher offensive line great. You can follow him on the Twitter machine at Derek_S_Burns if you want to become a much smarter Golden Gopher football fan. He breaks down X's and O's during halftime and then after the game that night. Derek, it's been far too long, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. It's good. Appreciate you having me back and excited to talk college football.
All right, Derek. I think people mostly listen to this podcast, the breakdown ones, for your insight. So let's just get right into it. We've talked.
Wow. No one cares about me anymore?
No, it actually, now that Derek's back, no one does care about you anymore.
That's fired. Go on.
Okay, let's just get right to it. We talked in the non-conference, or before the non-conference season, Derek, about the offensive line. And I guess, you know, being a former Gopher offensive lineman, what have been your impressions specifically from how they've progressed and specifically how they played in this game against Middle Tennessee State?
Well, I think definitely saw a big change in the last couple of games. That's probably the position group that I think has improved the most over the last couple of games, over the first three games. They've shifted schemes from the previous coaching staff. You know, it was a very power running scheme heavy previously, and they've shifted to a zone scheme. They've always run both, but now their bread and butter is a zone or a zone read. So I think there was some adjusting to that, the new system, probably some guys getting experience, and they looked a bit unsure and can kind of see some of that inexperience in the first game, just some tentativeness. And I think that's been the biggest change, through this last game. Middle Tennessee, they looked like, we're getting much better push. Middle Tennessee played more of a gap sound defense. They weren't really penetrating upfield. That wasn't really their game plan. And the Gophers took advantage. They were able to get a good push really from the first drive. And pick things up. They're mentally sound, not many missed assignments, and was really pleasantly surprised by the second half. They were really pushing that Middle Tennessee front seven around quite a bit by the fourth quarter, which I thought was a pretty physical front for Middle Tennessee, but it was overall good to see.
Well, we talked about it in the preview show, Derek, that Middle Tennessee coming into this game only averaging 2.4 yards a carry against this defense, and then Minnesota comes out on that opening drive and really gives Ronnie Smith a lot of room to work with. I thought that they did really well in that zone scheme. And maybe the biggest thing I'm irritated about, Derek, is the fact that I didn't notice what you noticed on, and you mentioned it to me when we were texting over the weekend, is the lack of read option. Again, I've been misinforming our readers, and when you go back and you watch the tape, it's very obvious that Minnesota isn't really running read option with Connor Rhoda at the quarterback position. Again, you were the one to point that out to me. I'd love to have you explain it to our listeners. What you've noticed from watching the first three games, what you noticed against Middle Tennessee State in terms of the lack of read option and what Minnesota is actually doing up front and what they're doing overall.
Yeah, sure. They've been, it can be a little bit confusing. They've been running inside zone all three games. That's been their, overwhelmingly predominant play call, but the blocking schemes and the personnel have changed, significantly and can change from play to play. So the first game they ran a lot of inside zone read out of like a four wide receiver set. So no tight ends, no H-backs. And in a zone read in that formation, their option is the classic optioning the defensive end. The quarterback takes a snap, either fakes or gives the handoff to the running back, watches the defensive end to see if he commits to the running back, in which case the quarterback can pull the ball out and take it on a keep. Or if he's reading that end and the end's shoulders are parallel with the line of scrimmage and he's watching the keep, he can give to the running back. And so it forces the defense to commit another defender because you have to account for the quarterback. What they've done beginning with, I believe the second game is running different blocking schemes when Connor Rhoda is at quarterback. So they're running inside zone, but they're, for the most part, they're taking the read out of it. They're running it out of a one or two tight end personnel set. So they're bringing in another blocker, and they're actually blocking that defensive end instead of read optioning him. So what that does is they're, to counter that, they're using either jet motion or a bubble screen to occupy the backside linebacker. And that's really, if you want to think of it, that's kind of the guy they're optioning, if you will. But they're not optioning him with a fake handoff. They're actually trying to keep him honest with a motion or a bubble screen threat in order to keep him playing, having to defend a bigger portion of the field. So they bring in another blocker or two, and then they're running really classic inside zone. So just straight handoff. And they're also, the way they're handing it off is similar to what you'd run in a pistol, but they're not in a pistol formation. And many times the quarterback's handing it off and faking like a pass after he hands it off. So he's actually not carrying out an option read. So that is something that's changed, and you can block it. And then within the inside zone, there's at least four or five or six different ways to block it. So I can go on and on, but they're mixing up many different things. But the key difference is with Rhoda at quarterback, they've not optioned the defensive end much, if at all, in the last couple of games.
So we've been harping about Rhoda needs to keep, Rhoda needs to keep, Rhoda needs to keep. And then again, you watch it through the eyes of Derek Burns and you see what he's talking about. And so, I mean, I don't even think Rhoda really has an option to keep by the way that they're blocking it, just because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I talked about this. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, the Middle Tennessee game in particular, they were actually bringing the strong safety on that. When the defense read handoff, they were actually bringing the safety down out for outside contain. So even if he had kept it and tried to, on like a bootleg or any sort of outside action, he would have met the strong safety, basically at the line of scrimmage.
So with no read option, and as Derek explained, what Minnesota's trying to do to counteract it that's when you see both running backs get onto the field. The example for Middle Tennessee State was Roddy Smith coming in that jet action, and Minnesota didn't have success there because they're front side tight ends. I think, well, on that play specifically, I don't know if you know the one I'm mentioning, Derek, it ended up in a tackle for loss because there were three edge players there when only two blockers, and neither tight end really got a hand on him. But for us being harping or trying to try and figure out how does Minnesota combat this edge, it's going to be, in my eyes, that Connor Rhoda is going to have to check more to the bubble screen, because again, they're only in that jet formation with the running back out wide only probably two or three times a game, while they're in pistol or they're in shotgun. And what Connor should be able to read, if he's not going to take the ball, is he should be able to read that even if they're not in trips to that side, they can run that bubble action where it's just one-on-one if the safety's coming down over the top. Because what I'm noticing, or what I noticed against Middle Tennessee State anyway, was that they love to blitz the corner. They're having the corner come off the edge from that side. And again, if he's not going to throw the bubble there, at least Connor has to be able to see that. Because again, they do the check to the sidelines, and you can see it from the press box anyway, that he is clearly coming. There's a safety 10 yards over the top. If you're not going to throw the bubble there, you at least have to hot route it. Again, you see that a lot more in the NFL in terms of quarterbacks being, a lot more comfortable in doing that. But again, to alleviate some of these pressures in terms of Minnesota's got only six or seven to block, seven or eight, seems like most times, Derek, in my eyes, that it's been plus one in the box for this offensive line trying to open a hole. But what are your thoughts on how to counter, again, what the defenses are going to be doing in terms of putting seven, eight in the box? And trying to figure out what Connor Rhoda can do now that he's going to be the full-time signal caller.
Yeah, they do have to throw out of it. So if the defense is plus one or two in the box and they're cheating in the outside linebacker to play run, you typically throw out of that defense with the bubble screen or another quick action pass. The bubble screen is designed to, you have numbers on the outside, when the wide receiver catches at the slot receiver, you're forcing either the safety to come all the way over and make that play, and it's an open field tackle. So if he misses the tackle, then it's a big gain. But even so, he's coming a long way to make that tackle, or that outside linebacker has to come, horizontally all the way to the outside of the field, outside of the sideline, to make that play And if he's cheating run, that's farther for him to stop, turn around, and get to the sideline. That's why another thing that can frustrate people is you see when the bubble screen is thrown, the route for that after catch is the sideline. The home run on the bubble screen, if or when it happens, is to get to the sideline. All your pursuit is coming from the inside out. So it may appear at times like they catch the bubble screen and why doesn't he cut it up? Why doesn't he cut it back inside? That's where all your defenders are coming from. The idea is, if I had to criticize a little bit, what they could improve on a bit is when you catch that, you have to really get on your horse and get to the sideline as fast as you can. You're outrunning the defense. It's like an outside run or a pitch play. You've got to get outside and outflank the defense. And beyond that, there's things like, they can sit on that play as well. And then, in which case, you can come back and you can fake the bubble screen where you have the outside split receiver fake a block for a count of one or two and then release behind him. And if that defender is sitting on bubble screen, you can burn them for a long play, and throw a ball downfield outside. So that's also a second counter you can run. But ultimately, you're correct. If they're playing inside, even if it's not pre-snap, if post-snap, they're just really downhill and adding guys in the box to play the run, it's a good counter to come back with, a slot screen or something on the outside.
As we know, a good complement to any running game is an efficient passing game. And thus far, the Gophers haven't had a phenomenal passing game, but they've had some big explosive plays and been fairly efficient. In this game, Connor Olson, that was terrible. Connor Rota was 11 for 18 for 122 yards. And Demetrius Douglas led the team with four catches for 43 yards. Derek, what have you seen, I guess, particularly in the pass game thus far? Looking at this Middle Tennessee State game, but maybe even just the season as a whole, what has stood out to you in the pass game so far?
Yeah, this pass game against Middle Tennessee was quite a bit different. The first couple of games, the defenses were running both man and zone. Saw primarily man press coverage against Middle Tennessee, which, in my opinion, they're going to see more of as they get into conference play, especially on the outside split receivers. Most of the teams in the Big Ten like to press the outside and sometimes even the slot receiver and then play with one or two safeties over the top. So that's what Middle Tennessee did. They were committed to mainly man defense across the board. And so I think the Gophers were a little bit more challenged with that than they had been in the first couple games. Their zone route trees that they've been running this year with this staff and scheme are totally different than the years prior. But in the zone game, if they don't, they've got a couple options. They can run things like bubble when they have numbers. They can run some hitches and comebacks, timing routes, which they have run in the past. But the other thing that I think what ultimately we're going to get to is you're going to have to identify single coverage in the outside at times and throw some of those balls down the field, some of those 50-50 balls, and come away with big plays. You have to penalize the defense for not, providing more safety coverage or more help on the outside. And if you're able to do that, you can pull those teams out of plus one or two in the box. It was a little bit difficult to see in the Middle Tennessee game, see that progress because they just ran the ball so many times. They didn't throw it an awful lot. They had some success when they did, but ultimately I think they're going to see more of that to come, and it'll be interesting to watch and see how this staff handles that press coverage and what some of the schemes they run, against it.
Well, in terms of the passing game specifically against Middle Tennessee, I just never thought that it really got on track. And again, we saw the slip screen from Nate Wozniak, from offensive coordinator Kirk Schrock. Again, Derek has talked about it. I mentioned it in my GIF rewind. Again, Kirk Schrock is going to have a bunch of counters to these different zone plays that Minnesota's running, and one of them is leaking the tight end out the backside. And watching Nate Wozniak rumble, bumble, stumble, and every time I say that to myself, I hear Chris Berman yelling it in the back of my mind, just rumble down the field for 50 yards was very fun to see. Again, as a former collegiate tight end, I know that most people think of the tight end as a glorified offensive lineman. And for Wozniak as a senior, again, he hasn't got a lot of passing game work over the years. To see him elude two defenders, first of all, he turned on the Jets, and those two Middle Tennessee State players didn't take the greatest of routes. But then he gets two blocks on the outside from Douglas and Eric Carter, and then he almost scores a touchdown. it was a ton of fun to see. And again, that skews kind of wrote his day, because you take out that one slip screen where Nate Wozniak decides he's going to go Travis Kelce on the bit, and Rota is 10 of 17 for like 70 yards. So Minnesota really didn't have to do a whole lot in the passing game. And again, we're going to get into this on the next podcast. Spoiler alert, we get Derek Burns for another episode here talking about non-conference thoughts. But it's been a work in progress. I didn't think that Rota particularly looked sharp. I thought that he kind of waited a second too late on a couple of throws. On the Demetrius Douglas crossing route, if he aims that towards the front pylon, you can see from the All-22 view, which is in the GIF rewind, that may be a touchdown. Instead, he kind of throws it short, and the defensive back's almost able to get his left arm in there to break it up. It's going to be interesting as we move forward, though, to see who else gets targets. Because I know Luke and I have talked about this off the podcast, but when you look at who Minnesota's targeting, they are targeting two players more than 62% of the time, and that's Tyler Johnson and Demetrius Douglas. And Tyler Johnson has 12 catches. Demetrius Douglas has 11. There's a 200-yard difference between the two. So you can see that they're used in two totally different ways, but Minnesota's going to have to find a third receiver. So especially since Brandon Lingan got injured in that late third quarter, even though I don't think that they really used the tight end in the passing game a whole lot anyway. But that's never a good thing when your best pass-catching tight end doesn't really get it going. So let's switch to the running game, Derek. I thought that Roddy Smith and Kobe McCrary didn't leave a whole lot out on the field. And as has been the case throughout three games, you watch both, whatever Minnesota running back is seemingly in there, the way that they continued to churn their legs, never stop their feet, and either spin away from it inside the pile. But it seems like they are very adept in terms of turning a 3-yard gain into 9 somehow. So I was pretty impressed with both what Rodney and Kobe did. Again, both went for 107 on the day. I believe Rodney Smith, I thought Rodney Smith had a touchdown, but apparently the stats tell me he didn't. So Kobe McCrary goes for 107 and 3. Rodney Smith goes for 107. He has 6.7 yards a carry. What did you think of Minnesota's running backs?
Yeah, I thought they played really well. It's been fun to see this year again with a little bit of shift in schemes. It was curious for me to see how those running backs reacted, how they handled it. Of course, they have a lot of talent there, so I was looking forward to that. And it's been interesting, in a power running scheme, typically most of the cuts and reads by the running back are made after they break the line of scrimmage. The running hole is somewhat predetermined. That's the philosophy behind a power running play is to get numbers at the point of attack, outnumber the defense on one side of the ball. And the running back does have a little more freedom when he breaks through to make his cuts. Zone, on the other hand, the running back is making a lot of reads when he gets the handoff. So before he even reaches the line of scrimmage, he has a lot of reads to make and to determine his cut before he, like I said, right when he gets the ball. And especially if you're in a one or two tight end personnel, you're adding more gaps that he has to read. And I know particularly there are a couple Rodney Smith had in the first half inside zone. You don't often cut play side on that. Usually you're reading the first down lineman past the center and you're working your way back and you read. But he had a couple of front side play side cuts that were just fantastic, where he was able to jump front side and because the defense was outnumbered there. So I think that's something that, as they develop, and the other nice thing about a zone scheme is you'll see it develop over time that it forces the defense to defend every gap. That's the philosophy behind it. And with these talented running backs, they're going to get more and more comfortable identifying on the snap, the front pre-snap, where they're likely to see the holes open up. So they'll be able to find those quicker, make their decision quicker, and they get the ball and hit the hole faster. So I think you'll see that progression over time, and they've been good thus far.
Ryan, we've talked about the offensive line struggled, kind of coming in, especially through the first kind of two games. They looked a little bit better this game. Is this just them gelling?
I think so. And again, I'm very curious to get Derek's thoughts on it, but the progression that this offensive line unit has made from game one to game two to game three is a lot of fun to see. Again, we've been harping on it since fall camp. How is this offensive line going to play? And again, against Middle Tennessee, They didn't come out, or excuse me, against Buffalo, didn't have the greatest performances. You know, they improved the next week against Oregon State. And then you see what they were able to do to a Middle Tennessee front that, you know, had been pretty tough against the run coming into the game. You know, specifically, I thought that Connor Olsen at center had a tremendous game. The way that he was able to consistently drive his opponent back, create holes for the running backs, was a lot of fun to see. I think that Donnell Green at left tackle continues to be very solid for Minnesota. I think he's been Minnesota's best offensive lineman. And then you were able to see on the long Rodney Smith run, I believe it was a power play, and Vincent Calhoun from his right guard spot comes pulling around the side. There's a blitzing linebacker that runs into Vince. Vince catches it, and then he remembers that he's got 80 pounds on the guy, and then he just buries him into the ground, and Rodney's able to get north and south. So, and I think the biggest thing for me, Derek, that I've been impressed with is while the running game seems to be coming along for this offensive line unit, how elite has the pass protection been? I mean, specifically, you know, a play that comes to mind from Middle Tennessee was that Demetrius Douglas play. Connor Rota takes the snap, and I believe it's play action, and he takes a 5 or 7 step drop, and then he sits there for like 3 seconds. And he's just sitting, he's sitting, he's sitting. Again, Minnesota gave up their first sack of the season, but through 3 games, they have been able to do, I mean, just a lot of great things in the passing game in terms of pass pro. So what were your offensive line thoughts from the Middle Tennessee State game?
Yeah, I think all year they've been pretty sound in the passing game. I don't want to discount it too much, but I will say, I think the defenses and the schemes are, the coaches are scheming to stop the run. You know, coming into the game, I think they know Minnesota's experience and strength has been in the running game. So I think they're trying to stop that first, and maybe you don't see their best effort, in the passing game. But that being said, play action especially is a really difficult play to pass block on. And I think we're talking about the same play. A play action ended up being a long completion. Middle Tennessee walked the inside linebacker out on the edge, and the Gophers were able to pick that up. The left tackle picked it up. He was able to recognize it. So they had the left guard take the defensive end who pinched, and then the left tackle took the linebacker. And, you know, for a guy as big as their left tackle is, to be able to run block for a count and then turn that into a pass block and play action against the linebacker who's probably – 220 or 230 pounds is very difficult. And they handled it. I was impressed. They handled it really well. And, overall in the passing game, first and foremost, they're doing well. You know, they're picking up, the slants and twists and things like that. And a lot of these schemes that they're running in the passing game for wide receivers are kind of long developing plays. So you can see that they're not able to get those guys downfield and get those things open for in a second or two. So, like, as you mentioned, they're having to take a few seconds, and they definitely had the time to do that. That's been afforded to them by the old line. So it's been they've done a good job.
All right, let's switch and talk a little bit of defense, especially in this Middle Tennessee State game. Obviously Middle Tennessee State was out their quarterback and arguably their best player in Ricky James. But one thing that seemingly was impressive to me was their ability to get pressure, Derek, with more or less 4 guys. What were your thoughts on the D-line play?
Yeah, I thought they played well, and they were, in turn, the Gophers front seven on defense played very physical, and they have been all year, played very physical the whole game. And, as well as they played, they're just a second off or just a count from making a lot more plays. They're right there. Their tackles on a couple of plays, both in the run and pass game, they're making the right reads. They're fighting through blocks, and they're just getting there. Maybe it's just short of a sack or a tackle for loss. And so it's going to be fun to see that progress. And hopefully as the season goes on, get even better. But from where they've been at, in this pass game, I thought they were able to put some pressure, and he had a backup in there who, as the game went on, and I don't want to criticize the young man, but as the game went on, he struggled more and more. And I think that was, he had a lot of things spinning. They were getting enough pressure on him. The coverage was good enough that You know, that's something where a backup comes in and he finds a little bit of confidence. He's able to carry the team and they're able to do a little bit better. Well, he came in and you could see right away he's trying, his confidence is up. He's trying to make some plays. And as the game went on, it just was, you know, the tire sort of deflated for him. And that was a credit to the Gophers defense.
What I noticed specifically in terms of watching the game back was a few different guys really came to mind. Merrick Jackson is probably the number one that came to mind. Again, he doesn't play more than 50% of the snaps, number 93 for Minnesota. But the way he was able to continually get penetration into the backfield, whether it was on run or more specifically in pass. Again, you look at the Thomas Barber interception, all four of the front four were able to get right into the face of the Middle Tennessee State quarterback, and specifically Merrick. Again, puts his big paws up, and he's able to get going there. And then in the late fourth quarter, again, him and Cashman combine to just pulverize the quarterback there, where Merrick hits him with a push-pull, Cashman bends around the right tackle, and that poor guy gets nailed. And so, it, you know, the bigger point here is if Minnesota is going to be continually able to get pressure with front four, that's really going to help Rob Smith in terms of game planning to continually try to hide the secondary of sorts. Again, they do have some very solid safeties, Antoine Winfield, Jacob Huff, and Duke McGee. But again, the corners are going to be picked on a lot more than I think they have been once we get into conference play, starting with Maryland and Purdue more specifically. So the way that Minnesota was able to generate pressure was really fun to watch. And then obviously, again, this is a unit that has been extremely stout against the run once again. You look at what they did against Middle Tennessee, 15 carries for 46 yards, and one of them came, or half that chunk came on one play. So it's very exciting to see. And again, for everybody continually telling me Steven Richardson isn't doing anything, please go watch any of my GIF rewinds to see the amount of double teams that, number one, he's facing, and number two, he's shredding. Because I had him for three pressures in the first half alone. Again, he should have had a sack, but he spun out of a double team, and he tried to re-accelerate to find the quarterback, and he was out of control, and he ran past him and forced an errant throw on third down. They don't convert anyway. So, again, I was very happy with the way Minnesota's defensive line was able to play against Middle Tennessee.
Let's talk a little bit about the linebackers, which seem to be the strength of this defense, Derek. I mean, they're playing everywhere from defensive end to actually linebacker. Do you see this as their strength as well? Again, they showed up with Thomas Barber with the interception. You saw Carter Coughlin getting pressure. You saw Kamal Martin getting pressure. What have you seen from this linebacker corps specifically in this Middle Tennessee State game?
Yeah, starting with the guys on the interior, they've been playing very well, to the point where by the second half you could see these teams have just gone away from the run. Now a little bit of that might be the scoreboard. You know, they get upside down on the scoreboard, they have to throw a little bit more. But even so, I think even without that, taking that into account, I think of these teams, they try a few run schemes in the first half and they're just not getting anywhere. And I think that's a credit to the inside linebackers play that the Gophers have had. On the outside, it's been interesting. They've played things a little bit differently, and in that they're lining those guys up in a more traditional. They're not moving them around as much, so lining them up in a little bit more traditional, base front, if you will. So be interesting to see if they utilize them a little bit more on like passing downs, twists and blitzes, and kind of moving that front, which I'm guessing they probably just haven't shown all that yet, and probably will as the season progresses. But I think the evidence is in the run game anyway, is just, you know, the stats will tell the story, and especially the fact that teams have just flat out gone away from it as the game has gone on. And, you know, and then in the passing game, it's been as I mentioned, a different scheme for these guys this year. They're dropping into zone quite a bit more, and they've done well at that. And the way when they drop, they're fight backwards, you know, towards the passes. So they get a corner route or a slant or a post over the middle. They're turning and running down those plays, and you can see it paid off for them with the interception. I mean, they don't get that unless that linebacker turns on pass and sprints downfield to get to the ball. Overall, I think that's going to continue to be a strength for the Gophers this year. They have experience there and a lot of talent, and going to be exciting when they take on some of those power running Big Ten team. It's going to be a fun matchup to watch.
I loved watching Carter Coughlin against the pass in this game. Even in the first half, I had him down for, it looks like, four pressures. And then once we get to the second half, again, I think he came in around five or six pressures. He had that holding call where he would have gotten the sack, but the tackle just egregiously held him. It was called. And then he almost gets to the corner on terms of that Celestine almost interception, where, again, they just kind of rolled to the left and no one blocked Carter Coughlin. And you might want to block the guy who's 6'4" and runs a 4.5 40. So the way that Carter Coughlin progressed from game two to game three in terms of against the pass was very fun to see. Again, we're going to have to see how Rob Smith continues to kind of get him in against the run, or gets, you know, a bunch of different things going against the run, because at times against Middle Tennessee, you saw Minnesota go back to that 2-4-5. And I saw at least a few plays where Gary Moore was at strong side end, Stephen Richardson in the middle, and they brought in a pass rusher. So even like a 3-3-5 of sorts. Again, Rob Smith is being extremely creative. And then I thought that Thomas Barber played extremely well, specifically in the second half. He's been playing extremely well, I think, all season. Again, he's someone that beat out Cody Polk as a true sophomore. And the way he's able to bring the wood is very fun to watch from a Mike linebacker who's only 5'10". And it happens every time Minnesota recruits a Barber. They come in under-recruited, not a lot of expectations. And here Thomas Barber is kind of the, I wouldn't say forgotten piece of that 2016 linebacker class, but pairing him with Carter Coughlin and Kamal Martin, you're seeing all three already on the field doing things. So Thomas Barber continues to play well. And then the guy that PJ Fleck has called the heartbeat of the defense is Jonathan Celestine. Again, they are rallying around that leader, and he should have had a pick. Unfortunately, he's a linebacker, so he doesn't have the greatest hands, and there's a reason he's a linebacker. But he has two passes broken up and four total tackles. So I think this linebacker unit is making a lot of great plays, especially out in the boundary, out in the flats, making sure that these 2 or 3 yard gains don't turn into 22 or 23 yard gains. So I've been very happy with the linebacker play, especially against Middle Tennessee. Then we transitioned, Derek, to the secondary. Again, you see the lack of depth that Minnesota has out there. In the fourth quarter and the final drive, Zoe Creighton gets hurt, and so Minnesota doesn't have anybody else to put in, so they put in their starting cornerback in Keandre Thomas. Now, Jacob Huff continues to do what Jacob Huff did all fall camp, and that's make plays in the passing game. Again, Derek broke it down, and you can go check that out on his Twitter. I broke it down in my GIF rewind. Minnesota was sitting, or at least the safeties were, because I noticed that Duke McGee was in man press. Minnesota safeties are sitting back, and you can see Jacob Huff read this crossing route coming across his face. He jumps the right shoulder of the guy, and he goes 64 to the house untouched. So Minnesota's secondary continues to benefit from some stellar play in their front seven. But Derek, what are your thoughts in the secondary, specifically against Middle Tennessee? Because, again, we'll get into the general thoughts in the next podcast.
Yeah, I thought that they played on the outside. They played pretty conservative, a little bit vanilla, but that's what they needed to do. And at the end of the day, they were able to get the job done. But they aren't pressing much on the outside. They're usually playing with the cushion, keeping things in front of them. And they're mentally, I think they're playing sound. In practical sense, again, I think as the season progresses, you're probably going to see teams probably try and target that and challenge that on the outside and try and play pitch and catch until the defense adjusts. But thus far, I think they're trying to play a little bit conservative on the corners and know that their safeties have a little bit more free rein. And I think they've gotten really good safety play, and not just the interception, but in run support, Duke McGee was able to come up on several plays, as he's known for, and close down, run when needed. And then the safeties in the passing game are able to help out. And, Winfield is the guy that they really can utilize all over. You know, whether he's a nickel or whether he's, dropping back into his zone, he's able to roam a bit. And I think that helps balance things a bit, because it allows them to not have to be as aggressive at corner on the outside. So I think it's been a good blend. And, in the Middle Tennessee State game, again, the quarterback wasn't able to create, other than a few plays here and there. And that's kind of how the whole season has been. Yeah, they've gotten hit on on, you know, a couple of plays. They click on a couple of good passes and they're able to come down with some bigger plays, but overall they're not able to develop consistency. And so it's been overall, they've got the job done.
All right. Well, I'd be remiss if we don't talk a little bit of special teams to close out this podcast. But Ryan, I mean, obviously Ryan Sentoso had one heck of a punt, which is a highlight, at least for me, from this Middle Tennessee State game. But what were your thoughts just on the specialists in general?
I thought they played a huge role in terms of determining this game. Again, Minnesota gets back in their own territory. Ryan Sentoso punted that from the goal line. So, again, I don't know, what is that, 12 yards from the long snapper? That ball traveled 74 yards in the air. Like, that was an absolute bomb. And, again, I thought from the press box, well, I hope he didn't outkick his coverage like each one of the three of us has with our significant others. So watching him boot one 74 in the air, it's a 61-yard net punt. I mean, that was fantastic to see. Again, 47 on average. And, again, he continues to be a weapon in terms of flipping field position. Emmett Carpenter converting both of his tries again from in the first half where Minnesota was struggling to score points and they got a benefit of the doubt from their defense. But him converting both field goals looks like he's back to that 2016 form. And then Rodney Smith deciding he's going to do everything on one certain drive for Minnesota where he takes the kickoff, gets a nice kickout block from Kobe McCrary, Blake Cashman. He's able to turn it to the 40. And then on the very next play, he decides it's time to go 29 yards on my first carry. So 69 yards and two total plays. I mean, that was pretty good. Again, coverage units have been very good for Minnesota all season. Kick returners only got 21 yards out for the long, and the punt returning game only had one return. So Rob Wenger's unit is playing a lot better from that first game, where, again, it just kind of overshadowed by Emmett having some struggles in his first game, but they've played well and back-to-back games. So, Luke, you want to take us out, you know, on this Middle Tennessee?
Yeah, so we want to thank everybody for listening. It's been fun to review these first three non-conference games. We'll have more breakdowns as the season goes on for each game. Again, if you want to check out Ryan's work on Gopher Illustrated, don't forget to do that. His Griff-free Ryans are great, as well as the work that Derek is doing on Twitter. Again, Derek_S_Burns. We thank you for listening, and go Gophers.